Welcome to Blocked and Muted with Jim Suhan. This is our new talk show at TalkNorth.com. We are going to buzz through a bunch of two-minute drills. We're going to keep it tight. We're going to keep it fast. Brandon Morton is going to keep me in line and watch the clock as I hit my favorite topics for the week. Thank you for listening to TalkNorth.com. Follow us on Twitter at TalkNorthPod to see all the shows as they are released. We have just a massive amount of content coming out. Thank you to everyone who has listened to the network and gotten to this point. By the way, Brandon, I need a Smoothie King. I think you should open a Smoothie King franchise in Minneapolis. Every time I travel to the South, I end up going to Smoothie King like every 3 hours.
Yeah, you've done nothing but talk about Smoothie King every single time I've had a chance to chat with you since you've been down there. So yeah, I'm in. I'm going to invest in a franchise with all this Talk North money that I'm raking in.
Okay, two franchises then. Put one in Minneapolis and one by my house. I know you can afford it. That is, by the way, Brandon Morton, our longtime producer. Again, he's going to be keeping me in line here. We know you are busy. We know you have other shows to listen to on this network. We are going to keep this tight and keep it moving fast. That's why we are calling these the two-minute drills. Number one, the Masters is the best golf tournament of all time. I'm writing about that for the Star Tribune after spending a week down here at the Masters. Fascinating tournament. Great to see Hideki Matsuyama become the first Japanese man to win a major golf championship. And I love the fact that he did that during a time when hate crimes against Asian Americans are through the roof and disgusting. I love it when sports can be symbolic and heartwarming in that way. I also love the Masters for all the other reasons. It's just such a beautiful place. And, you know, Brandon, one thing I was thinking about when you and I were talking about it the other day, you know, one thing of the Masters, on top of the beauty of the golf course, the history of the golf course, the way the golf course plays, the weather, what separates the Masters from so many other majors, every other major is a traveling circus. They set up tents for that week. And you really do feel like you're walking around a tent city that has a golf course in the middle. The Masters has like billionaire mansions and beautiful houses around, you know, everything that there's a sense of permanence with the Masters. It's going to be here every year. It's going to be in the same buildings. You're going to see the same shots into the same greens, and you will know, you know, who did what at that hole before. You'll know that what Jack Nicklaus did, what Tiger Woods did. The sense of permanence is one of the great advantages for the Masters. Congratulations to Hideki Matsuyama. Such a cool victory for him. And again, I feel very lucky that I get to cover this tournament for the Star Tribune. All right, number two. Yes, the Twins need a new closer, and I don't think they should give up on Colomé, but one thing I've learned covering the Twins, covering Major League Baseball since 1993, is that the closing role can be the most directly impactful spot on the roster when it comes to team morale. I still remember Twins people telling me that when Rick Aguilera gave up the big home run in 1992 that turned the season around at a time when the Twins were the model franchise in baseball, that people just, their shoulders slumped. You know, if you can't have a team that's firing on all cylinders and then have one guy screw it up for it at the end. And Colomé has done that. I would try to rehab him. I try to put him in a less stressful role. I try to get him rolling again. I wouldn't even say that he wouldn't be worthy of a shot at going back to being closer at some point. But this is a good team. Buxton is on fire. Cruz is on fire. Arise has been phenomenal. We know that their record the last 2 years in the regular season, second best in all of Major League Baseball. You just can't let one person ruin all of that. I would try Robles in the closer role. I would keep moving Rogers around for kind of the high leverage situations, but don't let Colomé's early season slump ruin the season. Number three, Byron Buxton has become a superstar before our eyes, and I will pause from this two-minute drill to tell you best way to listen to the network or the show, subscribe at your favorite podcast app. Subscriptions are free. It's just an easy way to listen. You can always go to TalkNorth.com, see all the shows and all the different sports and all the outdoor content. Thanks again to Brandon. And if you'd like to advertise with this show or anywhere across the network, you can reach Karen Cleary at K-C-L-E-A-R-Y at TalkNorth.com. So I've been writing about Byron Buxton since the day he was drafted. I've spent time with him in Atlanta, in his hometown of Baxley, Georgia. I've seen him play in Fort Myers and Cedar Rapids. I've been tracking him, and this is who he always should have been. Injuries have kept him from getting to this point. The fact that he did not, you know, hadn't played above high school ball, and he really didn't have a refined swing early in his career, meant that every injury really set him back and kind of started the clock on him learning how to hit major league pitching. Right now, he is as good as anybody in Major League Baseball. And he is, when you look at his bat speed, foot speed, arm strength, ability to win gold gloves in center field, this is who he should have been. Remember, when he spent his season in low A ball at Cedar Rapids, he put up almost identical numbers to Mike Trout at the same age. Now, I'm not saying he should be as good as Mike Trout. Nobody's as good as Mike Trout. Mike Trout is one of the greatest players in Major League Baseball history, but Buxton has that kind of talent. I'm not surprised it is finally showing through. All right, number four, Alex Rodriguez is buying the Timberwolves because everything that could happen that is bad to the Timberwolves will happen to the Timberwolves. I can't imagine a worse person to sell your local team to, especially if, as Glenn Taylor says, he wants the team to stay in town. You can't trust Alex Rodriguez. Alex Rodriguez is an egomaniac who cheated, even though he had plenty of talent before he cheated. I also go back to a story that somebody in baseball told me when Alex Rodriguez signed the huge deal and he's with the Texas Rangers. One year at the end of the season, bad season for the team, he was sitting in his clubhouse surrounded by his teammates, and he was talking to one player, and he was going down the list and saying which players should be back and which players shouldn't. Brandon, he was making cuts. A player on the team was making cuts at the end of the season while all of his teammates could hear him. I can't believe Glenn Taylor is selling to this guy. I guarantee you Alex Rodriguez will try to move the team. I don't know if he'll succeed. I guarantee he will try to move the team. This is a disaster.
Why would they let anybody with an asterisk next to their name back in pro sports, of any pro sport? Why would that even be allowed?
It's amazing. Well, and ESPN hired him to be a baseball analyst. I don't understand why they could hire anybody. There's so many good announcers across the world. I mean, Justin Morneau's better than he is. Roy Smalley's better than he is. That people just get enamored with fame. And it becomes a Kardashian thing. They become famous because they're famous, so they remain famous. It has nothing to do with accomplishment or what kind of person they are. This is a disaster. I will say, Brandon, for number five, I have a positive Timberwolves two-minute drill here. Everybody was worried about D'Angelo Russell coming back and messing up the Timberwolves. He's been great. And this is what, you know, there have been two fantastic developments this season. Number one is Anthony Edwards is a phenomenal offensive player. Number two, D'Angelo Russell came back when Anthony Edwards was dominating, when Karl-Anthony Towns is touching the ball and producing, and he has fit in. He has played really well off Karl-Anthony Towns. He has been efficient offensively. This is one of the best developments of the season. I still say, for all the problems that the Minnesota Timberwolves have, including Alex Rodriguez as a future owner, the roster ain't bad. Towns, Russell, Edwards, Beasley. There is a real chance here with another high draft pick that this could be a really competitive team next year, and a competitive team with great upside. I know that sounds crazy, but it's true, and we got to stick to stuff that's true here. All right, number six, should the Wild make a trade? I don't know. We're talking here on the morning of the trade deadline day, so by the time you hear this, the trade deadline may have passed. We may already know what the Minnesota Wild have done. I'll just say this. I watched Chuck Fletcher year after year make deals more out of desperation than logic. He always felt like he had to win this year. He always felt like it was worth throwing assets at this year. And what he ended up doing was harming the Wild's overall organizational talent and depth, because he just kept on trading second round draft choices, and usually for players that weren't very good and didn't stick around very long. So I do trust Billy Guerin. And I know, famous last words. I do trust Billy Guerin to make a good decision here. I think he understands he's going to build around, you know, Fiala and Kaprizov, two young players. He's going to try to build this up into a championship team, and making one quickie desperation deal at the trading deadline is probably not going to get you there. So just don't give away assets just to give away assets. We learned that from Chuck Fletcher. Number seven, Luis Arraez should always be batting leadoff for the Minnesota Twins. He should bat leadoff for the Minnesota Twins five or six times a week. And if you have to take Polanco out of the lineup every once in a while, or rest Donaldson, or play Arise in left field. Do it. Nobody energizes the lineup the way he does. And think of it this way, Brandon. We now have pitch restrictions on so many pitchers. They might get pulled after 70 pitches, maybe after 80, maybe after 90. Luis Arise might cost a starting pitcher 10 pitches per bat. If he faces that guy three times, he's eaten up 30 pitches of the guy's 90 pitches. If he faces him once, he might have eat up 10 of his 90 pitches or his 80 pitches. It's an incredible asset, especially since Arise, usually when he has those kinds of at-bats, ends up on base. He is the only pure leadoff hitter on this roster. Bat him leadoff, play him as often as possible. And no excuses. If somebody else has got to sit to get his bat in the lineup, do it. If he's got to play first base instead of Miguel Sano, do it. All right, now for the extra point. I am going to anger every Twins fan now. The Twins have lost three extra inning games in which the opponent got to put a runner on second base to start the 10th inning. Of course, the Twins got to do that too. I know it seems unnatural. I know it is untraditional. But baseball's games last too long and are frequently too boring. You don't want to watch 14 and 15 inning games where you burn out the pitching staff, where all you see is a parade to the mound of the worst pitchers on each team deciding the game and people swinging for the fences. I love the fact that we have, when you have an extra inning game now, you know it's going to be resolved quickly. I love it. I love it. I love it. I know it's not traditional. Roy Smalley is probably going to hate me for this, but that's what I think of it. Thanks again to Brandon Morton. Now, up next, we have our interview segment of the podcast. We have 10 minutes or more with someone I don't hate. Our first week, it was Derek Falvey, who was great. And this week, from France, Nafisa Collier of the WNBA's Minnesota Lynx, a star player, a really cool person. So I hope you enjoyed. As promised, today's guest is Nafisa Collier of the WNBA's Minnesota Lynx, a UConn grad. And as I was looking at your bio, Fee, you came from Jefferson City, Missouri. I went to school at the University of Missouri and had some projects that took me down to Jefferson City. My daughter went to the University of Missouri and worked in the state house a little bit there in Jefferson City. Should I be surprised at all that a player of your caliber came from Jefferson City? Or is it a good place to play basketball?
I don't know. I mean, Maya Moore's from Jeff City too, so that's
I know. I was going to bring that up too. That's why I'm so surprised. Two world class players coming from Jefferson City. I didn't see that.
I know. Yeah, I mean, the Missouri area has quite a few good players. You know, Beal is from Missouri. Michael Porter Jr. is from Missouri. So Jason Tatum. We got some good people coming out of here. I don't know what they're feeding us in the water down there.
Did you and Maya have any connection or any mutual acquaintances in Jefferson City?
Yeah, actually. So I went to school with her cousin. He's in my grade. His name's Jordan. And so I saw her at, you know, some of my basketball games growing up. And then obviously I watched her at UConn and stuff and at the Lynx afterwards.
And did she help recruit you to UConn?
She did not. Okay. Yeah, no. Just a coincidence.
So tell me about your view of Maya Moore. I'm sure you would just love to be playing alongside her right now, but both as a player and an activist, what's it been like for you to watch her?
It's been amazing to watch her. Yes, I would love to play with her. That opportunity would be amazing because, you know, like I said, we're from the same place. We went to the same school, now the same professional team. So it would be, you know, a dream to play with her. But it's been so amazing just to watch her play and to see the work she's done with activism and to see her, you know, doing what she's passionate about and making a difference in the world is so inspiring.
And have you had any conversations with her in the last couple of years?
No, I think actually the last time I talked to her was when I was at UConn. So I haven't talked to her since I became a professional.
So tell me about France, playing in France and what life is like in France while dealing with some COVID restrictions.
Yeah, France is beautiful. I mean, it's awesome here. My apartment is right by the beach, so I can see that every day, which is, you know, what I don't get that in Missouri or Minnesota. So it's really cool. But yeah, there are restrictions. I think we're actually in lockdown right now. The president here just spoke last week. We have, you know, I can't even think of the word now.
Quarantine?
We can't go outside, but not quarantine. We can't go outside past curfew, man.
Okay.
I don't know why. Yeah, we can't go outside past like 6 p.m. and we can't go farther than 10 kilometers from where we live. So it's been kind of crazy with that, but I'm basically in the gym all day anyway, so it's not, you know, too bad for me.
Right. My wife took a trip to France with her daughter a few years back, and she said that it was strange. It was like, if you wanted great food that France is famous for, you could certainly find it, but it was usually in a sit-down restaurant. The meals took a long time. And she said that a lot of the meals she ate were kind of quick and, frankly, not that great. She was like, you had to really seek out the good food. I was wondering, is that your experience?
That hasn't been my experience.
Okay.
I wonder, where did they go?
Paris.
Paris.
Yeah.
I'm in the south of France, and this is actually like a vacation spot, so I don't know if that makes a difference, but the food I've had is really good. But I have noticed that it does take a lot longer. In like some places, you have to even order the day before if you want it. So that's definitely something that's different from America.
Oh, interesting. So what was it like for you to watch Paige Beckers? And are you surprised at all that a freshman could do what she did? Even given UConn tradition, for her to break records at UConn, it really means something. What were you surprised at her ability to do that right away in college ball?
I was surprised just because it is something that's so hard to do. And I've seen Paige, I saw her in high school, and I actually played with her for USA 3-on-3, where we went to Qatar. So I knew she was really good. I knew that she was special from then, but it's a whole different thing when you go to college and do what she did. It's so impressive, just the level of confidence that she played with, how much fun she brought to the game and to the team, it seemed. So it was so fun to watch her this year.
And by the way, your motivation for playing in France, is it primarily to bolster your income? Is it because you wanted to see France? Is it because you wanted to work on your game? What was the primary influence?
Money is always, you know, up there, obviously. But
sure.
The main reason was because, I was supposed to play in China last year, but COVID hit there first. And so I was only there for 10 days. And I really felt it when I came back to play for Minnesota, just being off for so long. That's the longest I've ever gone between playing, because, you know, I go from middle school, high school, college, you don't have breaks like that. I didn't play from October until the next, you know, July when we started. And so even though I'm in the gym working out, it's just a huge difference playing games and then working out, you know, on the court. So I really wanted to go somewhere this season so I could prepare and, you know, feel good once the WNBA season started.
Did you get a chance to watch the Final Four?
I did, yes.
And
well, actually, I mean, I watched it the next day.
Right.
I didn't get to watch it live, but yeah.
You know, Cheryl and I, Cheryl is a podcast on my network, obviously, and Cheryl and I talk all the time. You know, we started doing the show, I don't know, 5 years ago or something. And back then we were saying, you know, the women's game is underappreciated. It's undercovered, you know, it's under-sponsored. It really feels like we're at a tipping point in the game where everybody's recognizing that what ratings for women's basketball are up, that the play is at a very high level. I think it was actually a great thing that when they were given a terrible weight room in the NCAA tournament, they made a big deal out of it, and it highlighted the inequities and really put the NCAA back on their heels. But you've lived through this. You've been, you know, do you feel like women's basketball is on the verge of really breaking through?
I definitely think it is. And I think, you know, a good indicator of that is what you said, the fact that it blew up so much with the weight room. And you saw outrage from a lot of people, and it kind of really highlighted those differences, and it made people care. You know, got people talking, and it got ratings up. And then you have a great game like UConn and Baylor. That was such a fun game to watch. The ratings were amazing for that game. And so, yeah, I definitely think that we're on the rise, and people are starting to realize that it's fun to watch women's basketball.
What were your experiences like with Gino? And I've gotten to be around Gino at the Olympics a little bit when Cheryl was working for him as one of the assistants at USA Basketball. And I've, you know, heard Taurasi talk about him. And of course, one of the great moments in the NCAA tournament was Paige smacking him on the butt. Would you have smacked Gino on the butt given the right opportunity?
I don't even think it would ever cross my mind to smack his butt, to be honest. I feel like that's one of the things I was talking about with Paige. She has just so much confidence, and it's awesome to see. I think I would definitely slap CD's butt before I slap Coach Gino's butt.
And what are there any similarities between Gino and Cheryl, the way they coach?
I think definitely. And I think that's why both of their programs have been so successful, is because what they expect from their players is so high, their expectations are so high that you have no choice but to meet them or to be left behind, which I think is a great thing because it allows players to rise to their ability. And they're both so great at bringing that out of players, bringing the best of themselves out of those players. So I definitely see similarities between, when I went from college to coach, I mean, to play under Coach Reeve.
Does Cheryl coach you differently than Gino did?
Yeah, she definitely yells at me less
Does she?
than Coach Gino, which I'm definitely not complaining about.
What did Gino yell at you about?
I mean, what didn't he yell at me about?
Does he yell at everybody or was he just picking on you?
Oh no, he yells at everyone. He distributes it, I wouldn't say evenly, but he definitely hands it out across the board.
Some coaches like picking on role players because they can make an example of them. Other coaches feel like they needed to pick on their best players to set the bar high. Which way does he lean?
No, that's what I meant. Like, he's pretty even across the board.
Okay.
He will let you know whether, I mean, my freshman year, Breonna Stewart, obviously one of the best players, he benched her the game because she wasn't doing what he wanted her to do. And that was her senior year. So if that doesn't tell you that he's willing to do what he wants to do, then I don't know what will.
And that completely ruined her career too.
Yeah, I know.
Hey, you were the sixth pick in a draft, and Cheryl went in kind of this I want to rebuild quickly mode after losing some of her superstar players. And honestly, with the sixth pick in the draft, we're all thinking, okay, you can get a good fit, a good player, and then you end up winning Rookie of the Year and being an all-star and all that. Have you even surprised yourself with your ability to adapt to the pro game?
I don't think so. I don't think I've surprised myself because I know that I'm a hard worker and I know that, I'm a quick learner and all that. So I knew it was going to be hard. It's obviously different. You're playing against players that you grew up watching and who have so much more experience than you and players who are more talented and all of that. But, I had confidence in myself that I would be able to adapt quickly. I felt like I was really prepared after leaving UConn. I think that the coaches there do a really great job of making sure that you're not only physically prepared, but really mentally prepared for what, professional life is going to be like. So I felt confident, going in.
So again, Cheryl loses some great players. She decides she's not going to do the slow rebuild. She wants to get right back into competition. And again, that's risky, but she gets you, she gets Crystal with the sixth pick in the draft again, and all of a sudden she's rebooted. And then she sat out kind of one free agency period thinking the deals were just not that good. And then she goes on all in this year. And she's described this team now as a championship caliber team. Have you been surprised that she's been able to pull this off at all?
I'm not surprised. She's a great recruiter and she's the kind of person that you want to play for and you want to play hard for. So for her to be able to get players is not surprising because when she talks, it makes you want to buy all in. I've experienced it the last 2 years. And even if I had a choice of where I was going, I would want to play for Coach Reeve because, like I said, she makes you passionate about the game. So no, I'm not surprised. She's a great recruiter.
So we just watched this great tournament, and there's so many intriguing players, so many players you want to see in the WNBA. And the reality is, you got 12 teams. Most rosters are pretty loaded with great players. There aren't that many slots open. Would you like to see the WNBA expand?
I would love to see us expand. I mean, that's the goal, is expanding the game and to eventually grow out of what we have now. So, yes, I mean, I would love to, even though I want to stay in Minnesota, I would love to see, my hometown, St. Louis, get one maybe. That
Yeah.
would be awesome. But yes, absolutely, I'd love to see the league expand.
Yeah, I would love to see an NBA team and a WNBA team in either St. Louis or Kansas City, if not both. I just think,
Yeah.
I just think those are good sports towns. I would think they would support it.
They definitely are. I mean, I can speak for St. Louis. They are diehard fans for whatever sport. They love sports there. So I think it would do well.
Okay, last little segment here. Tell us a little bit about yourself. Like, what are you right now? What are you watching when you watch something other than sports? What are you listening to? What do you do when you have a chance to get out of your place?
So I'm reading a lot. I always love reading. And I actually randomly started watching Survivor.
Really?
So I've, yeah. I don't know why. I've never watched it before, but I've watched like four seasons now in the past, I don't know, 2 weeks, and I love it.
I
I'm
guess
on a
it's got a
Survivor
kind of
kick.
sports element to it, doesn't it?
I guess it does. Yeah. I mean, I love seeing the people doing challenges and wondering, would I be able to do that? And the strategy behind it is really cool to watch. I like that it's not like really reality where it's a bunch of drama, but it's like I said, strategy and games. And I don't know, I've just been hooked on it.
And what are you reading?
I just finished reading. It's called From Blood and Ash. It's like a fantasy book with people with like powers and like Harry Potter kind of thing. So I just finished that one.
Anything else you'd like to recommend?
Well, I love Sarah Pekkanen and Greer Hendrix. Their books, they're mystery writers. It's like murder mysteries. I love
Ooh.
all of their books, so I'd recommend those.
That's up my alley. And one of the reasons I ask is Roy Smalley does our baseball show on this network. He recommended A Gentleman in Moscow, when we were just talking about books one time. And I read it. It was like the best book I've read probably in the last 20 years. So,
Really? I need to write that down.
yeah. So repeat the names of those authors again. I'm going to write those down.
Sarah Pekkanen and Greer Hendrix, they co-write their books.
Oh,
And
got
they're
it.
really good. Yeah.
Cool. All right. Just to wrap this show up, first of all, I appreciate you taking the time out. I know you're in France. You have a busy schedule, and technology is always a pain in the rear. So I appreciate you taking the time. One thought on anything you like: women's basketball, France, Cheryl, whatever you like.
Well, I would probably give a shout out to Through the Lens. It's a company that, my fiance Alex and has started, and I'm with it. And we have players like Candace Parker and Carmelo Anthony and Trae Young and Sabrina Ionescu. And it's like a training kind of platform where people can learn the ins and outs of basketball, and they go from coaches to players to, reporters, anything in the basketball industry, and kind of just gives a deep dive into it. So I would definitely want people to check that out.
Great. And what's the website? Throughthelens.com?
Yep.
Oh, cool. And by the way, Candace Parker has been great doing basketball analysis, and it's been so funny to watch her put Shaq and Charles in their place. I don't know if you've gotten a chance to see that.
I have. It
It's
is
been
fun.
great. Yes. Hey, thanks again, Fee. I'll see you when you get back to town.
Yep, thank you.
Thank you for listening to my podcast. We will be back with Blocked and Muted next week.